Welcome to A Million Other Choices. Thank you for joining me. We discuss dark topics here, and sometimes things get hard to listen to. My focus is always on victims and their families and friends, which can be very hard to listen to, so please be advised of this. Ad-free episodes can be signed up for through Red Circle or Patreon, where you can also get access to full-length bonus content. You can make a one-time donation at Buy Me a Coffee. Disclaimer and sales pitch are done. Next up, legal. All sources are publicly available information, and I use a wide variety of sources to try to ensure accuracy, but I cannot confirm the accuracy of publicly reported information. If you would like a specific source or sources, please email me at amillionofthechoices@outlook.com and I will provide it to you. You can also email me there with case suggestions and just general comments. Okay, we are done. Let's get going with what you came here for today. Hello and welcome. I do have a warning today that today's case involves a small child, but I am not going to go into a bunch of graphic autopsy details. But it is rough to hear regardless. So if you do click off, I will not be offended. But Cooper's story, I think, is super important to tell and to keep his name and his memory out there. And we're going to be doing a bit of a deep dive on this one as well, because I need to tell you the whole story and nothing but the whole story. There is a fair amount of coverage on this case that's out there, and I think there's a whole season of Serial that was dedicated to it, but it always seems to be kind of told from one point of view or another, and none of those kind of gray areas in between. And I actually live in the gray areas because I enjoy a good rabbit hole. I think my whole life is a series of yeah, buts, and you know I like to take you down the rabbit holes with me, so let's begin. Leanna Taylor was born in 1983 in Alabama with dreams of becoming a nurse and one day a mother. And when she was 20, she met 23-year-old Justin Ross Harris, and soon after meeting, they married. And they tried unsuccessfully for a few years to start a family and give Leanna the children that she just always had really wanted, but it kind of wasn't happening as quickly or as easily as they both would have expected that it would. Justin, who normally went by Ross, worked for a time as a police dispatcher in Tuscaloosa, but he left in 2009 to pursue a business degree at the University of Alabama to just better support Leanna and the children that they were one day determined that they were going to have. And after finishing school, the couple moved to Vining, Georgia, where Ross got a job with Home Depot as a web designer, and Leanna put her nurturing and caring personality to work as a dietitian. And then finally in 2011, Leanna learned that she was pregnant. The couple was completely overjoyed when on August 2nd, 2012, little Cooper Mills Harris joined their small little family. And Cooper was one of those perfect first babies, like the kind that makes you want to have more kids. He was happy and smiley and outgoing. He smiled at strangers and he liked to wave at people. He was just an adorable, sweet little peanut. And Leanna and Ross poured themselves into parenting and loving and doting on Cooper. They both shared equally the duties that came with a newborn, from the middle of the night wake-up calls, changing the seamlessly endless diapers, and so forth. And as both Leanna and Ross worked full-time, Cooper had a daycare that he went to. And depending on either work schedule, it was decided who would drop Cooper off and pick him up, kind of changed from day to day. But was usually Ross that dropped him off in the mornings. And on the morning of June 18th, 2014, it was Ross's turn to take 22-month-old Cooper to his daycare. And the usual routine was that Ross would drop him off and then swing by the Chick-fil-A on Cumberland Parkway, use the drive-through, and then carry on to work at the Home Depot, like the corporate offices. It wasn't a Home Depot shop. It was the corporate offices. It's called the Treehouse office. And sometimes he would instead stop at the Chick-fil-A with Cooper, have breakfast with him, and then drop him off at daycare then before heading to work. And so that was the plan on this morning. And it seems to be the case because surveillance video shows Ross holding Cooper, coming in and ordering. And he's also, at one point, he shakes the hand of the manager, who seems to know both of them on a friendly basis. Ross then carried on with his day, arriving and logging into work at 9:25 a.m. And at 12:30, he had made plans to have lunch with two friends. And then they came to pick him up at the office. He got into their car and they went to Publix for lunch. And then they stopped at a Home Depot. Yes, he worked at Home Depot, but this time he stopped at one of the stores instead of at one of the offices. So he bought some light bulbs there. And then when his friends dropped him off back at work, he walked to his car, opened the driver's side front door, and then just kind of tossed them into the seat, closed the door, and then returned to his office. At 4:16, after finishing work for the day, he got into his SUV and then drove away. And the plan then was that he was going to be heading to the AMC movie theaters to watch 22 Jump Street with the two friends that he had had lunch with earlier. And shortly after leaving his work, the parking lot where his work was, he squealed his tires pulling into the Acres Mill Mall parking lot. Now, the temperature outside that day was 92 degrees or like 33 degrees Celsius. So it was hot outside, even hotter in the car. And yes, the reason Ross had squealed into the parking lot was because he realized he had not actually dropped Cooper off at daycare accidentally and then had continued on to work instead, not realizing what he had done. Now, for those of you that are not familiar with this story and are thinking like, Kim, why would you do this to me? Tell me such a horrible, tragic story. And again, be assured I'm not going to be going into any of the details about Cooper's autopsy, examining anything that he might have experienced. I just think we don't need to think about that stuff, and I certainly don't want to talk about it. But Ross Harris was charged and then later convicted with malice murder, felony murder, cruelty to children, sexual exploitation of children, and dissemination of harmful materials to minors over this incident. So I think we have a few things that we need to kind of examine here, because those are kind of unexpected charges when it comes to leaving your child accidentally in a hot car. Now, unfortunately, these kinds of accidents happen, and for some reason, they always seem to happen on really hot days or really cold days. And there's actually a named syndrome for it. It's called forgotten baby syndrome. And it happens to normally, like if you're sleep deprived or caregivers that are maybe under some stress, or it could just be simply when you make a small change to a very normal routine. And in Canada, on June 23rd, 2022, Diana Smith actually dropped her 23-month-old son off at daycare every day on her way to work as a teacher at North Hastings High School. Except on that particular day, she forgot, and she didn't discover her mistake until 3:45 that afternoon when Everett was found with no vital signs. The Ontario police categorized it as a tragic situation, and no charges were laid. Diana and her husband, Jason, actually started a memorial fund for Everett's in Everett's memory, kind of hoping to bring some awareness to other parents to hopefully prevent some future tragedies. Now, when charges are laid in these cases, at least here in Canada, they are normally abandonment or failure to provide the necessaries of life to a child. Very rarely are the charges for, like, say, negligent manslaughter. It's a little bit different in the States, where an average of 37 children die each year from being left in a hot car. Now, most of these cases are unintentional and due to this forgotten baby syndrome. However, in the U.S., charges are normally laid, and the case actually goes to a grand jury, and then they decide whether they're going to take the matter to trial and ultimately what, if any, charges are actually going to be laid. Like in Florida, Tracy Nix was sentenced to 5 years in prison. Now, she had originally been charged with aggravated manslaughter, which carries up to 30 years in prison, when she unintentionally left her 7-month-old granddaughter in the car while she went for lunch with some friends. She was acquitted of the manslaughter charge, but convicted of leaving a child unattended in a vehicle, causing great bodily harm. However, in Tracy's case, only a year before, her 16-month-old grandson, Ezra, had also died after he wandered under a fence into a pond in her backyard. And now, in that case, any charges that were brought were dropped, but being a second-time offense, they charged her in this case. But still, neither of those were considered malice. So what was so different then about Ross Harris's case? Well, I guess we have to kind of start with the timeline of how everything went down. Now, there is some audio and visuals here, but they're hard to listen to without subtitles, and they aren't all that clear. So I'm going to have to kind of walk you through quite a bit of it. So in the morning of June 18th, 2014, Ross left the family home in Marietta, Georgia to take Cooper to Chick-fil-A and then to the Little Apron Academy before heading to the Office Depot on Cumberland. Now, surveillance footage does show the two in the restaurant. Cooper is cradled in the nook of Ross's arm while he orders. And after breakfast, he buckles Cooper into the back seat. It is a rear-facing car seat. And then instead of making a left at Pace's Ferry Road, where the daycare is, instead he continues on straight to the Home Depot offices. And the day then goes and proceeds as I said it did. He goes for lunch with some friends, briefly drops off some light bulbs into his driver's seat, and then starts to head to this movie theater before realizing that Cooper's in the car. And he pulls into the Acres Mall lot, where he gets out of the car. He's screaming, "What have I done?" He tried CPR briefly, but he wasn't able to focus, realizing it was too late, and a bystander took over that, and then another bystander called 911. Police and firefighters arrived very quickly because they were in the area at the time. Now, there is some dash cam footage, but it's very grainy. It's hard to hear, so I'll just kind of go through it for you. Oh, and I should mention that the Acres Mill Mall is about 2.5 miles from the Home Depot offices. So Ross walks by the front window of the police cruiser where the dash cam footage is coming from. He's got his hands over his head saying, "Oh my God, what have I done?" There's a female officer identified as Jacqueline Piper. She tells everyone to kind of get back, that they need some space. Ross then is pacing back towards where Piper is standing outside of the view of the camera. He's holding a cell phone to his ear at that time, and he's again saying, "Oh my God, oh my God," and he's kind of like screaming. And Piper asks him for his ID. Ross asks, like, "What?" And she says, like, "I need to see your ID." And Ross then says, "I'm not, listen," like, he just kind of hesitant about it. And the officer says something kind of incoherent. And then Ross says, "Shut the fuck up and hold on. My son just died." Now, it sounds like at that time he's been grabbed by one of the officers and says, "All right, all right, all right." And the third officer says, "You need to watch your fucking mouth." He's then put into a police cruiser while they attempt to work on Cooper, and unfortunately they have pronounced him dead. Now, it's hard to decipher him here, but it sounds like a lot of "what have I done" and "oh my God" repeated over and over again. You can't really see Ross that well in the video, but he appears to be like wailing, often throwing his head back as he yells. He is taken into the police station for questioning. And meanwhile, Leanna is notified and also later comes down to the police station. The police interrogation footage is important, at least to the police investigators, to their standpoint, not so much because of what Ross says, but well, he doesn't really act as one would expect, let's say that. And a lot of it has to do with before the interviewing part even starts. So Ross is put into a room by himself for about 15 minutes before the officers come in to talk to him. And of course, this is all videoed and audioed, but not very well. Or it probably was at the time, it was fine. But at the trial, it was like, it's a video of a video. So it's rather degraded. And no one likes listening to bad audio, I have learned in my podcasting career. So again, I kind of have to describe it to you, but I'll play a little bit of it just so you get kind of an idea of what I'm talking about. Now, he waffles between crying into his hands, but somewhat, I don't know, I guess you'd say like performatively, and then sitting like he's looking around like you would waiting for your food in a restaurant. At one point, he's playing with his teeth for some weird reason, and then he kind of goes back to crying. There's a couple of times where he does this weird breathing thing, like a weird huffing thing, almost kind of like he's psyching himself up to be hysterical or something. Like, it's very strange.
Lowe's knows to bring your vision to life, it's important to find the right color. That's why My Lowe's Rewards members get a free paint or exterior stain sample to test your look and find the perfect color to confidently refresh your space. Lowe's, we help, you save. Offer valid in-store only 6/19 through 6/25. Limit one per customer while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See associate for details. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
God, I'm sorry.
Anyways, when the officer comes in, he appears. Now he's calm and almost is like making small talk with the officer, talking about his job.
All I need to do is just make a check.
And it is interesting that there is no like hoarseness or wavering in his voice like you do when you've been crying or trying not to cry. And he starts to tell his story. And he talks very fast, so it's hard to make out everything that he's saying, but it's basically the story of going to Chick-fil-A, etc., only he omits the part about the light bulbs going like there after lunch, and does go into a bit too much detail about strapping Cooper into the car seat before leaving Chick-fil-A. Just kind of odd details to add, like you're justifying something or trying to say, see what a good dad I am. It's also a lot of added details when I would think at that time I would just be focused on like those first few seconds of the worst part of my life.
And one day, my wife and I, we're going to make a difference. She left work at approximately 7:15. I left the house with Cooper at about, it was about 8:30. And the plan was I was going to take him to Chick-fil-A in Vinings, which I did. And we got breakfast, and me and him do that at Chick-fil-A in Vinings approximately 2-3 times a month together. We have our daddy's son breakfast again. And after we eat breakfast, I usually take him across the street to daycare, which is at the Home Depot. And then I'll go to work, which is at an alternate location, which is I don't work in the big SSC. I actually work in an ex office off of Cumberland, 2600 Cumberland Boulevard. It's just a an ex office at the big building. It's where my team works. And I leave in Chick-fil-A. I play in this car seat. And then make it fully cheap. Like an operator can always put him in his car seat. So make sure he's strapped in all the time. According to all the regulations that we watched on YouTube and everything. I strapped him in, I tightened him up. I gave him a kiss, he gave me a kiss. What I do every time, it's my routine. I let him know I love him, I give him a kiss. Because for some reason, God forbid we're in an accident, I want him to, and I died, I would hope he'd have a memory of me, you know, telling him every time the last time he sees me that I love him, and give him a kiss. And just today was just a careless, I got in the car, and instead of going from here to here, I went straight to work, which is up turned over to Cumberland. And I drove down Cumberland Boulevard. I went to work as if he wasn't even in the back. And I probably didn't even hear him because he falls asleep really easily when you drive a car. And I went to work. And I got there at work. I had a normal day. I had a normal work day. I had no meetings. What time did you get to work? About 9:30.
How do you clock in?
I don't.
So you get to work about 9:30, and what do you do?
I go straight to my desk, and I sit down, and I check my emails, and I banter with the guys I work with, and that's pretty much my day. And I open my morning meeting every day at 10:30, I have no meeting. Day's going good. Lunchtime rolls around, I got some guys that I work with across the street. They came and picked me up. We went to Publix, ate lunch. They took me back and dropped me off. And then I finished the work day, and then we had plans to go to the movie. Me and the two guys on lunch with, we had plans to go to the movie at 5 o'clock, which is where I was going. I was going to try to get there about 4:20, 4:30, just to kind of beat the, if there's an after work crowd trying to go to the movie or anything like that, I thought I'd get there a little early. And then as I was driving down,
And I think it's important to note that this is literally maybe like an hour or so after Cooper was discovered. And it does seem strange that when he's told what he's going to be charged with, like cruelty to a child, he seems like he doesn't understand why they would even consider charging him.
Which I have no doubt about. I have a right to answer. change stuff, that's true. So I would disagree.
Now, at this point of the investigations, they are going on the fact that his behavior seems cold and kind of acty. And it, like, to them, it's inconceivable that he wouldn't have noticed Cooper in the car. Like, whenever you do a shoulder check, it's a rear-facing child seat there, that he was at best clearly negligent. However, they're about to take a look at his phone, and that's going to change a lot of things. It turns out that before and on the day of Cooper's death, Ross had been sexting, including sending some illicit photos of himself to 6 different women, including one girl that was only 16 at the time. Now, this looked even worse for him. So when Ross's case went to trial in late 2016, he was charged with malice murder, felony murder, cruelty to children, sexual exploitation of children, and dissemination of harmful materials to minors. Now, personally, I feel that the trials should have been separated into 2 separate trials, one for the murder part and one for the sex stuff, but no one asked me. So they were not just trying him for Cooper's death, but also the photos and the underage communications that he had on his phone, which I personally don't think would have given him a chance in hell of a jury being able to distinguish between those 2 acts, one being maybe an accident and one being, well, just gross and disgusting. Now, it's no spoiler alert that he was convicted of the sexual exploitation and dissemination charges. So I'm only going to go through the case for and against malice murder with regards to the death of little Cooper Harris, because the other stuff, well, there's just too much evidence of it and it's gross. And clearly Ross Harris is not just a bad husband, but he's also like a pedo creepo pervert. But does that make him a murderer? So we're going to see if it does or not. One of the big things talked about here is motive. And the prosecution tied the motive to his sex addiction, that he had intentionally left Cooper in the car so that he could pursue this sexting stuff. However, during that day, he never actually left the office to do anything sexual with anyone. He was just doing it all over his phone. So there was no reason to leave him in the car when he had daycare arranged that day anyways. However, it was pretty clear that Ross was tired of being married. But there wasn't really any evidence that he was also tired of being a father. However, Ross did send a text to one of his online victims reading, "I love my son and all, but we both need escapes." And that text was sent while he was in the Chick-fil-A with Cooper that very morning. But on the other hand, a travel agent testified that Ross had contacted her just the day before about planning a family vacation. And on the day that all this happened, while he was at work, he looked into passport applications, including one for Cooper. Now, Leanna did testify for the defense, and this was after learning about all his affairs and all his grossness. But she testified that although he turned out to be a horrible husband, that she did not believe that he would ever do anything intentionally to hurt Cooper.
He does everything to me. He loved his smile. He loved play. He would talk to and smile at anybody. It didn't matter if it was a stranger or not. He loved to play with cars. He was really fascinated by trucks and cars. And he loved bananas and just running around, get tickled. I mean, he was just like any other toddler. He was so even, he was so even tempered. Just everything about him was just very laid back, very chill, very go with the flow. And he was just amazing. I mean, I miss him so much. He was home most every night for dinner. We ate dinner as a family. He was involved in, feeding him when he, before he started feeding himself. He would feed him, I would feed him. Involved in bath time. I did give him a bath a lot of the time, but Ross enjoyed giving him a bath as well. And we would just play around the house. He'd get his toys out and run around with him. He had a big red ball that he loved to play with, and he would throw that up and around, and they would toss that together and play chase and watch TV and read books.
Was it typical for Ross to just shove Cooper off on you, you to have to take care of him at night?
No.
Tell us a little bit about what kind of time they were able to spend together outside of the home. What sort of things would Ross and Cooper do together?
We went to the parks a lot. Just to go to the parks and swing and slide. And we went to several Braves games, sometimes with friends, and took him to that. He always enjoyed that. We went out to the aquarium, went to the circus. Wherever we went, he went.
You do it. Go.
Ross loved this little boy.
Yes, I did. Yeah. Very much.
She believes to this day, she hates him. She wants nothing to do with him for being unfaithful, but still believes that he was always a loving and caring father. Now, a psychology professor, Dr. Jean Brewer, testified that it was completely possible that Ross had suffered a memory loss and that there was really nothing unique about this case compared to other cases that he had worked on regarding forgotten child syndrome.
Yes, I think that that's evidence that there could have been fatigue in this case. I don't know whether there was or not. I'm just saying that we know from multiple nights that he was awake, that he wasn't sleeping. We know that he slept more than this night. We know that he was on top of being physically tired, I assume, just given his texting patterns over the nights. He was also mentally. Stress is a bad word. Because stress means that there's a hormone release. And, he could just be preoccupied with negative thoughts about work, like an internal distraction. And if those negative thoughts, we call them ruminations, also creates mental fatigue. So there could be physical fatigue, there could be mental fatigue, but that's a could be. I certainly don't know. I didn't assess that.
And all this might just mean nothing.
And all of this could mean nothing.
Because he might have just forgot just because he forgot.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of the prosecution's case came down to Ross's behavior from the scene and throughout the interview stage. Now, I'm not going to go into the medical examiner's testimony. I just don't think we need to go there. Cooper died from hyperthermia, and that's all we really need to know about that. So this is Jacqueline Piper.
At this point, what, if anything, did you do after coming upon Officer Gallimore and Officer Folia?
I asked if there was anything I could do. Officer Folia mentioned to me, because there had been quite a crowd that had gathered, that we needed to move them back. And so from there, I observed that we had a security guard that worked the area that was standing there. And we took the time to ask him to help us move everyone back from the scene.
Now, when you were there and you were doing that, did you encounter anybody who you found out later to be the defendant in this case, Justin Ross Harris?
I did. As soon as I met with the security guard, I saw a subject in a striped shirt who was pacing the parking lot. And due to his demeanor, I thought that he was somehow involved.
And had you seen him before when you got out of your patrol car?
Briefly.
At that time, and then after you went back over there and you saw this person in the striped shirt, what was he doing? Or I know you said he was pacing or things like that, but what was his demeanor?
Specifically, he was on the cell phone. I noticed actually that he was left-handed, so he had the phone up to his ear, and initially he was just kind of talking. To me, it appeared kind of calm, and then he started yelling. I found it kind of unusual, just because the only way I can really describe a yell, and I'm sorry, I don't have the words better.
Have you explained it to me a long time ago about how you would describe it?
The best way I can describe it is if you've ever seen Anchorman, and you have Will Ferrell shouting, you know, I'm in a glass case of emotion. It's that monotoned yelling that just seems really forced.
Okay. After having seen that, did he go from times of yelling to times of being calm again?
He did.
Okay. During this time, did you attempt to approach him and talk to him?
I did. The first thing I wanted to do, and we do this pretty much in every scene, accidents, domestic disputes, is we're going to want to know who we're talking to, because we know in the future we're going to have to write a report. So the first question I asked him is if he had ID, from which point he pulled up his hand and kind of did this number like, you know, wait a second or hold on, which Officer Rufolia saw. And so she came over to assist me and she told him to get off the phone.
During this time, when he's, I guess, holding his finger up like that, do you remember what his demeanor was specifically at that time as far as how he was talking? Was he screaming or was he low again?
He was low again.
Now, at that point, when Officer Folia told him to he needed to get off the phone, what was his reaction?
When she told him to get off the phone, and first of all, y'all will meet Officer Folia, I think, at some point during all this. She's a very small officer, like myself. I'm 5'4". I think she's just around 5 feet. He, instead of, you know, just staying calm, took a step forward towards her, which I perceived to be threatening. And from there, we went ahead and detained him. We grabbed both his arms. Initially, he was pulling away from me, and I told him, hey, stop fighting. And from there, he complied, put his arms behind his back, and we used two sets of handcuffs to detain him.
Okay. And before he took the step, did he say anything when he was doing that? And I understand we just have to say it for the record exactly what language he used, as best you remember.
He stepped forward, and he said, shut the fuck up. My son just died.
So he actually said he'd already said, he said, my son just died. Is that correct?
I believe so.
Okay. So at this point, did you know what exactly had gone on or how it got to this point?
I had no idea.
Okay. During this time and before that with the screaming and yelling, did you ever see him crying or anything?
I didn't see any crying. His face wasn't wet. Just the initial screaming that all I can really describe as being monotoned.
Now, you stated that you handcuffed him after he'd said these things. And you also mentioned he was on a phone. Mm-hmm. Could you tell the jury, when you handcuffed him, while you were handcuffing, or sometime during the course of this, did you see or did you locate a phone on him?
We placed him in handcuffs. He had his phone in his hand. So when we handcuffed him, I noticed that his handcuffs were already on, and he started to move his phone into his back left pocket. As he began to slide it into his pocket, I wouldn't say it was fully in there yet. I went ahead and removed it.
Okay. Officer Brent Gallimore.
I saw the crowd looking down towards the driver's side door, and I continued to go forward to see what everyone was looking at. And when I passed the back side of the vehicle and actually could see where the driver's side was at, I saw that there was a child on the ground and a guy kneeling over the child. I could tell the child was not moving. So I instantly just slammed on my brakes. I slammed on my brakes so hard, my B-bar and Officer Foley actually rear into my vehicle. Got out of the car, ran to the front, ran towards the child. At that point, there was a male. I don't know who he was, but he wasn't doing CPR or anything like that. He was just kneeling over the child. I told him to go ahead and move out of the way. I looked at the child, and the child was not breathing. So.
Now, how would you describe just physically the behavior of the defendant when you saw him going back and forth on the other side when you first arrived?
The first time I saw him, it was kind of just talking on the phone.
Okay.
That's all I could see. I saw him for a brief second. It stood out to me because he was the only one moving around. Everybody else was frozen. Like, when I first pulled up, mm-hmm. he was the only person moving. He was talking on the phone, kind of looking up in the air. Mm-hmm. I figured something was going on with that individual when I pulled by him.
While you were tending to the child, did you notice the defendant in your periphery or anything like that, or hear him or anything of that nature?
Not at that time.
When you got to the scene and you got down to the child, did Officer Foley follow?
She did.
Could you describe to the jury what you found when you came upon the child? Describe the child's condition as best you remember.
Yeah. When I came up to the child was not breathing. You could tell that something seriously has gone wrong. I didn't know at the time if the kid just got hit by a car, the kid was choking, or what was going on. Got down on my knees. I immediately saw if the kid was not breathing. Like, I could actually see Cooper's tongue sticking through his teeth at the time. I didn't know exactly what was going on, but I looked at it, you know, maybe he was choking on something. Something that matters to that. Child was very pale, so I kind of figured maybe he was choking, or if maybe a car hit him and he went into shock. So at the point, I didn't know. So I immediately began doing compressions.
At this point, let me ask you, he was what type of ground was he on? What was it?
He was laying on his back on the asphalt next to the car.
Okay.
And it was very hot on the ground, too.
Okay. Was it hot outside that day?
Yes, it was extremely hot. I was sweating in a matter of seconds out of my car.
Okay. After you noticed the condition of this child, what, if anything, did you attempt to do?
At that time, immediately started doing compressions. I mean, kids aren't breathing, that's my first thought. Get the kid breathing again. Officer Bullock came over, began looking at Cooper's mouth, see if she can get the child's mouth open. As we continued to do compressions, I actually looked up at everybody. I'm like, hey, what's going on? Is he choking? Like, I had no idea what was going on. The more compressions I did, the more I could observe the child in the state that he was in. And you can actually see his eyes were wide open, and you can see a gray shadow towards the bottom of his eyes. And from my training experience, that's a sign that the child's been deceased for quite a while. And also, I looked at his legs that were still bent in the air, and his hands were kind of gripped to the side. And when I tried to move his legs, I could tell that the child had a rigor mortis at that time.
During your time at the scene, just from what you observed of the defendant, how did you describe it in your police report as far as how he was acting?
What about eventually acting hysterical,
okay.
Acting upset?
Okay. And what do you mean by that? What do you mean by hysterical and upset or acting like that?
I mean, like, when I say he was acting hysterical, I literally mean felt like he was acting hysterical. I would say that he was not acting genuine.
Okay.
And should acting consistent.
I'm sorry.
Right. That's exactly what I thought. That's what I was saying. He's literally, I felt that the hysteric, the acting was actually if.
Okay. I want you to show me in your report where you say that he was not acting genuine.
I do not put that in my report.
You don't put anywhere in that report anything about putting on a show or a performance or that it was fake or false. Nothing like that in your report is there.
That's correct. That's just going off my memory.
In November 2016, Ross Harris was convicted on all counts and sentenced to life with no parole for 32 years.
The court pronounces the following sentence in the case of the state of Georgia versus Justin Ross Harris, criminal action 14-93124. As to count one, the court imposes the sentence of, as to malice murder, with the jury having found the defendant guilty, sentence of the court is life to serve in confinement without parole. As to count two, felony murder, guilty, it's vacated by law due to the conviction on count one. As to count three, felony murder, disposition by the jury of guilty, it is also vacated by law due to conviction on count one. As to count four, cruelty to children in the first degree, the jury having found the defendant guilty, the sentence of the court is 20 years to serve in confinement. This will be consecutive to count one, malice murder, life to serve in confinement without parole. Count five, cruelty to children in the second degree, the jury having found the defendant guilty, it will merge into count four as a matter of law. As to count six, criminal attempt to commit a felony, to wit, sexual exploitation of children, with a disposition by the jury of guilty, the court imposes a sentence of 10 years to serve in confinement, consecutive to counts one and four. As to count seven, dissemination of harmful material to minors, with the jury having found the defendant guilty, the court imposes a sentence of 12 months to serve in confinement, consecutive to counts one, four, and six. And as to count eight, dissemination of harmful material to minors, the jury having found the defendant guilty, the court imposes a sentence of 12 months to serve in confinement, consecutive to counts one, four, and six, and seven. When they came back into the courtroom to render their verdict, and they were polled by the court and asked if, in fact, that was their verdict in the jury room, and if it was still their verdict, each stood and each unequivocally said, yes, it was. There was no hesitancy. There was no reservation. There was no indirectness in their answers at all. They fairly deliberated and discharged their duties and found the defendant guilty of what factually was a horrendous, horrific experience for this 22-month-old child who had been placed in the trust of his father, and in violation and dereliction of duty to that child, if not love of that child, callously walked away and left that child in a hot car in June, in Georgia, in the summer, to swelter and die.
Now, 2 months later after this, he appealed for a new trial on the grounds that the testimony about all his affairs and gross stuff made it an absolute impossibility for Ross to have received a fair trial. But that appeal was denied on May 20th of 2021. So it took a few years to even get heard before a judge. Now, this appeal then moved on to the Supreme Court of Georgia. And on June 22nd, 2022, They found that the evidence regarding his sexting stuff was, quote, needlessly cumulative and prejudicial, and that reversing the convictions on the murder and cruelty counts, leaving only the sexual exploitation charges as it was. Now, the Supreme Court of Georgia felt that a substantial amount of evidence to lead the jury to answer a legally problematic question, what kind of man is Ross, and that the trials should have been done separately. If only they had asked me first. Anyways, in legalese, that means by combining the two charges that the state was able to introduce in detail evidence of the nature and scope and extent of the truly sinister motive it ascribed to. Now, the district attorney mulled that over for a little bit and then issued a statement that the decision to sever the trials took away their ability to rely on what they considered their motive evidence and would not be retrying him for murder. In June 2024, Justin Ross Harris was released from prison after serving 10 years in prison for the sex-related charges. As for Leanna, she filed for divorce on February 11th, 2016. She moved to Alabama to be closer to her family and to hope one day to have some more children, saying, quote, I want that because I've always wanted to be a mother. And I enjoyed being Cooper's mom very much. It's scary when you've experienced every parent's worst nightmare to think about having another child and that fear of something happening again and that constant worry of wanting to keep them safe, end quote. She was very bitter over the trial and everything that happened. I mean, she understands learning that her husband was a creep is one thing, but they initially actually tried to implicate her as well in Cooper's death. Now, she said of Cooper's memory, he was lost in the scandal that was the trial. He's seen as a child that wasn't loved and wasn't wanted, and that just wasn't true. I don't want people to think of my son that way. After Ross's conviction was overturned, stated through her lawyer, she said, quote, this is vindication for obviously Ross Harris and really a vindication for my client Leanna and their son Cooper. She doesn't want someone to sit in prison or be convicted of something that she knows they didn't do. While this will not change anything about my day-to-day life, I hope that it shows people what those closest to the case have been saying since the very beginning. Ross was a loving and proud father to Cooper. At the same time, Ross was being a terrible husband. These two things can and did exist at the same time. And, like, what do you think of that? Like, I mean, I kind of agree with Leanna. I think that Ross was probably an okay dad and loved his son. But at the same time, he was a pig. I think he was really self-absorbed, like so self-absorbed that I think that he was the kind of father that was attentive when his child was in his care. But the minute he put him down or, you know, gave him to someone else to take care for, he completely stopped thinking about him and just kind of thought about himself. Which is why I think that he could go his entire day without realizing that he had forgotten to drop Cooper off. Now, did he deserve prison time? Yeah, absolutely. He interacted with underage girls. Now, did he murder his son? No, but it was negligent. And although I would usually rally behind anyone that made that kind of tragic mistake, because I know that it's possible to do, I think that this is just my personal opinion, probably not a very popular one, but I think that the reason he acted so strange afterwards and like he kind of didn't get it and was kind of trying to act upset was that I think he is such a narcissist that he felt like in his mind, like, oh, shit, this really sucks. Oh, well, I mean, maybe it's for the best in the end. Like, he's in heaven. We could have another kid if we want. Like, I honestly think that's kind of how he thought about it. Like, having a son was kind of like having a prop in his life. It was something to make him appear like a good guy. And I don't know. I don't have any proof of this. It's just a feeling I get from watching him. I used to say about this person that I once knew that he loved his kids, he really did, but that he hated me more. And I think that in Ross's case, he did love his son, but he loved the sexting and this double life more. But it still doesn't mean that he murdered his son. Like, all murderers are assholes, but not all assholes are murderers, kind of thing. And just as far as if you're wondering, like, why are you saying he's a narcissist or whatever? There's the key telling moment in Leanna's testimony where she talks about what kind of person Ross was.
He just would talk to everybody, very outgoing, very vocal. He never met a stranger. It was not unusual for him to, you know, reach out to a person maybe at a table sitting next to us, you know, overhearing their conversation, saying, "Oh yeah, I saw that game too. What do you think about this?" I mean, he really very, just didn't meet a stranger. I mean, very, appeared very confident, very sure of himself. He liked to be the center of attention.
Did Ross have a tendency to exaggerate?
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Because I was with him in several different, you know, situations, like, you know, if he's going to tell a story, I would hear that story several different times. Each time he told that story, it may be a little bit different. There might have been more of whatever he was talking about, or it would have been grander, or, you know, he would have gotten more excited about it and talking about it. And I, you know, I would point that out to him later and say, "You realize the last time you told that story, you didn't. That's not quite."
Right.
So. And I think it's very telling, and it says a lot that there might be some narcissism there. And so that's why I have that sort of opinion. And again, I know it's not probably popular. I don't know what you guys think. Like, do you think that he did it intentionally? Do you think that the sexting was kind of a motive to want to live a child-free lifestyle? And if you wanted to get rid of your child, it just doesn't seem like a way you would go about doing it. Because, like, if that was your plan all along, that I'm going to leave my son in this hot car, I mean, you're taking a chance that somebody's going to, you know, come across, wander past the car and see the child, and then, you know, call the authorities, and then you're in trouble anyways, but your kid, you know, is still alive. I just don't think it's not exactly a foolproof plan for murdering your child. I think it's just a really, really, really tragic accident. But I also think that he is a pig and an asshat, and I don't like him. And two things can exist at the same time. So with that, I am going to be back again next week with another horrible, awful case. In the meantime, you know what you're supposed to be doing. And as always, thank you so much for listening.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5 quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details. Craftsman Days are here at Lowe's with big savings on the tools you need. Right now, get a free select tool when you buy the Craftsman V20 2-Pack Battery Kit. Whether it's the backyard, the bathroom, or beyond, Craftsman has the tools to help you power through and get the project done right. Because DIYing is unpredictable, but your tools shouldn't be. Shop Craftsman at Lowe's today. Valid through 7/9 while supplies last. Selection varies by location. Maximum initial battery voltage measured without a workload is 20 volts. Nominal voltage is 18.